Okay, this is Live from the Table, the official podcast of New York's world-famous comedy cellar, coming at you on Sirius XM 99 Raw Dog and on the Riotcast Podcast Network. Dan Natterman here with comedy cellar owner Noam Dorman, producer of Live from the Table, Perry L. Ashton Brandon, our guest today, Judy Gold, stand-up comic and host of the hit podcast, Kill Me Now.
Wait!
Yes. She's had stand-up specials on HBO, Comedy Central, and Logo. And her new book, Yes, I Can Say That, When They Come for the Comedians, We're All in Trouble, was released in July from Day Street Books. We also have Alan Havey, stand-up comic, accomplished actor. He's been in such shows as AMC's Mad Men, Billions on Showtime, Judd Apatow's Love on Netflix, Bosch on Amazon. From the West Coast, Alan Havey is with us tonight. Welcome, one and all.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Dan. Good to see you. Good to see you, Noah.
Good evening.
By the way, Alan Havey had, I know it's out of date, but had one of the best fucking shows on late night television.
Oh, that's very sweet. Thank you, Judy.
True. It's very true.
What was it? Night After Night? What was it?
It was called Night After Night on Comedy Channel and Comedy Central.
Great show.
I've told you, Alan used to do the best interviews. I mean, you were really, really good at that. Better than some of the guys, or most of the guys who made their careers doing it.
Well, it takes about a year of solid interviewing, but I was just kind of getting up on my pony legs.
And then
you were really good.
Pull it out from underneath you.
Well,
that's what we should do.
I had a little over 3 years, so I'm not complaining. It was a great experience.
I love that show. Was so good.
I had great writers, a great staff, good producers. I was not alone.
Okay, very humble.
All right, so
did you read my book?
We have not. I haven't read the whole book cover to cover. I've read parts about it. I essentially looked for my name in it. No, I haven't had a chance.
You're in it, and I thank you in it too.
Yeah, that was very sweet. I appreciate it. I have not sat down.
I really am curious as to, you know.
Does Judy know she has a microphone?
No. She's like Kimberly Guilfoyle invention last night.
I just complimented you. And
I know.
I have two copies of it.
Oh, thank you. Thank
I got two copies. I ordered one copy from Amazon and they sent me two.
I don't know if I haven't read it, but
you're the second person who told me that.
I checked out the foreword today in the first chapter. It's very funny, very personal, and very true. I'm glad you wrote this book.
Thank you, Alan.
People are getting attacked. Comedians are getting attacked. They're cherry picking our material and say, look at this person said. If you take it out of a context in a comedy club, it doesn't work.
Alan, you're going to love all the history of censorship too in it.
Good.
So come on, Julie. Give our readers, give our listeners at home a synopsis.
Okay, so the book is about free speech from the perspective of a stand-up comedian, and it gives a lot of the history of comedy, and censorship, and how we got to the point where we're at now, and the heroes, you know, that were arrested so that we can say whatever the fuck we want on stage. And now we have these, like, PC police, I'm triggered, when you take intent, nuance, and context out of a comedy bit, you're done. You're done. And all we want to do is make you laugh. And if you go to a comedy club and get upset that you're offended, that you got offended, okay, that's like going to an amusement park, getting on a roller coaster and being upset that you got sick or scared. So cut the fucking shit and stop holding comedians to a higher standard than elected officials whose speech really does incite violence and kill people. We're just trying to make you laugh. We're trying to see you to see the world through our perspective. Yes, we make points. Writes a song you don't like, you're like, oh, I'm gonna just, I don't like this album. I'm not, and fine, that's the end of it. Why is it when a comedian says something you don't like, they should be canceled forever? No.
Well, who's been canceled?
With regard to songwriting, I would just say that Billy Joel did get a lot of flack for Only the Good Die Young, which was apparently very helpful because he got a lot of publicity for this.
You know what? I write about Billy Joel in the book because, you know, unlike a comic, he's, you know, we do our act. We can't live off the same act for 50 years. And he can. He can live off the same album for 50 years.
Well, no, he's written many albums. He's,
well, yes, I with guess. New
material. Alan, so. Alan asked, who's been canceled? Who are you referring to?
What comedian has been canceled from what he said? Or threatened?
Well, there's comedians who have been canceled for, okay, Kevin Hart. I talk about Kevin Hart not being able to host the Emmys. Ridiculous.
Oscars.
Oscars, same thing.
Yeah. What did he say?
He had a terrible joke, terrible, stupid joke about, which I don't even think was funny, about if he came home and his son was playing with a dollhouse, he'd break the dollhouse over the kid's head.
Okay. Well, that's more of a statement.
Right.
So they saw that as anti...
He had some anti, you know, gay shit.
Right.
Okay, fine. I know him. He's not anti-gay. The jokes weren't even funny. Okay. Kathy Griffin cannot answer her phone. She cannot answer her own phone.
This is showing cutting off Trump's head, or what appeared to be.
Right.
So it wasn't even
a
joke.
It was
more visual.
Right. So she's at a photo shoot. They're like, oh, this will be funny. Not funny. But how would that photo be reacted to today? How would people react to that today as opposed to 3.5 years ago?
Well, she lost her gig on CNN.
She lost all her work. She lost her agent. She lost her manager. She lost everything. Everything.
But she got back up. She has a huge gay audience that supports her.
Okay, Alan, what are you fucking just trying to give me shit? No, she really, you know, you call her. She went to Europe. She did a whatchamacallit in Europe. She's banned from every late night show.
Okay.
No.
Okay, Judy, let's talk about a tough one. Roseanne Barr. Making that joke about Valerie Jarrett looking like a character in Planet of the Apes. How do you feel about that one?
I feel like everyone has a right to say whatever they want and tweet whatever they want. But if you work for a corporation, you kind of sell your soul.
Right. Well, which Kathy Griffin was a corporation and she was on CNN. I'm not saying I agree with it, but you do have to take responsibility for your words.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
But what about Roseanne Barr going on at the Comedy Cellar? And people, if people accuse me of being, racially racist,
no,
Jason.
Sorry. Look, this is her art. You know, this is what she does for a living. You can't say a person can't do their art. If she was a painter or she'd still be painting. If she was a writer, she'd still be writing. I mean, this whole idea.
Ari Shaffir with his Kobe Bryant joke.
Right.
I didn't hear
Ari that. Ari Shaffir expressed joy when Kobe died because Kobe had been accused of rape. And so Ari said, well, essentially good that he died.
So liberals love basketball more than they hate rape or something like that.
I think I suspect Ari says things to be controversial.
Right.
Gilbert
canceled from Affleck. You know, I interviewed him for a long
Again,
time.
Again, canceled from Affleck, a corporation.
Right.
So they have.
That's
they have
what
to
the
think
same thing
PR,
is but, with. That's the same thing with Roseanne.
But is that Roseanne put that on Twitter, right?
Yeah. Right, but she is.
So that was a racist statement.
Right.
Comparing a black person to a monkey.
What right. Should a corporation?
That's not a joke.
That was a joke.
I don't think it's a joke. I don't think it was funny.
We're talking about stand-up comedians. On stage, yes, it's a racist statement, and
well, not,
and I understand why she was taken off the air. What? I'm sorry.
Saying that people look like people is sort of a staple in stand-up comedy. Oftentimes, it's like, oh, I look like you know so and so and so and so had a baby, or I look
right,
like so and so.
Right, that is a racist trope.
It is, but a racist trope can be a joke, but it's a racist joke. It's a mean-spirited joke, but a joke nonetheless. I mean, it's kind of gets hazy, you know, in terms of what's a joke and what's a statement.
But, to be fair to Roseanne, listen, comparing black people to monkeys is a third rail that's been around for a long time. So she should have been, and for good reason. But She claims that she never realized that Valerie Jarrett was actually black. And I rolled my eyes at that at first, but she's really stood by that story. And it is possible. You know, it is possible she thought she was just like a dark person.
Okay, but that doesn't excuse the stupidity and the...
No, it excuses. That if she thought she was just... Like
oh, it
said,
does? Like look her up and say, it's called Google?
No, but excuse is the wrong, isn't the word I would choose, but it changes the intent of the joke for sure. It changes. It means that she didn't knowingly just step on a landmine.
But she unknowingly. She come right back with that saying, I didn't know she was black. Was that a week or 10 days later?
No, she came right back with it.
Okay.
And I don't know that she's being honest, but I just, to be fair, we don't know that she's lying either. So I want to say it for the record. You know, to be fair.
Judy, what do you think a corporation should do when they're in a situation where they might lose money because, you know, for example, Shane Gillis, when he said what he said and SNL dropped him. What should Netflix do when
I don't know, I'm not scandal? I don't think in a corporate way. I have no executive function. You know, I'm an artist. I don't know. I don't know how corporations think. I have that is not even in my brain.
I mean, generally they think, is this going to affect our bottom line?
It's all about money. Money.
I'm not sure that's true, Dan.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why I'm not sure it's true. I don't think there's ever been an example where anything actually did affect a corporation's bottom line. They keep their head down for a couple of weeks and then it just blows over. There is a peer pressure aspect to this, and although Alan is correct, you can say, well, it's corporate and money and whatever it is, you can take that same logic and justify everything that Lenny Bruce went through, say, well, he was breaking law and it was corporate and whatever it is, so at some point we have to say yes, but the social norm that we keep hugging is really, really bad for comedy and for art and for free conversation. And like the Comedy Cellar, when I went through that Louis thing, I could have not put Louis on, and people would say, he's a private business, he has to worry about the bottom line, and nobody can say boo to me. But the truth is, we got through it fine. We took a blow for, I mean, we stood our ground, and we what's the expression? We took a blow for free speech, or we cast a blow for free speech. What the fuck?
And Louis is a big part of why the club is successful too.
And also, Louis in my book as well.
He's definitely part of why the club is successful. The club was successful prior to Louis' show and after Louis' show, but that's not why I did that. That's not why I did that.
But what you can't say, Louis shouldn't be able to perform. I mean, if you own a club and you don't like him, then you don't have to book him. But you can't say he should never be able to get on stage again. You know, I talk about Coco Chanel in the book. Coco Chanel was embedded with the Nazis, embedded. And yet I go to synagogue on Rosh Hashanah and they're all wearing Chanel suits, Chanel scarves, Chanel purses, Chanel shoes.
Well, okay? Same thing with Hugo Boss. They designed the uniforms for the SS.
Right.
I honestly, they did a reasonably good job. Those uniforms were definitely sharp. I don't condone the principles of the SS, but their sartorial choices, I think, were reasonable.
We're encouraging a sense in people that they have a right to impose their will on other people in terms of what they should be able to see. So, for instance, with Louis. It's not that people who were coming to the Comedy Cellar didn't want to see Louis. People at home in Iowa were demanding that we not put Louis on.
And you had comedians out there too, which I was surprised.
Yeah,
a lot of comedians were troping Louis and giving Louis a hard time. Now, I don't agree with what he did. He apologized for it. I read everything I could, but I think you have to do something pretty heinous not to do comedy.
Bill Cosby.
Yeah. And getting back to Lenny Bruce for a second, Lenny Bruce was an individual. He wasn't representing any corporation.
Right.
He wasn't a permanent part of any club. He was a single entity on his own getting up, and his material is what was illegal at the time. And that's why he was arrested.
But it's also, you know, but they did arrest him on the cursing, but it was really the substance of his material. It was really the segregation and the Vietnam War and
Yeah, but then, like Tonight Show.
And also the sexual, stuff.
But then, after he did that, the Tonight Show wouldn't want to put him on. You know, I mean, I think we all agree that we would like to see free speech and people being able to say basically whatever they want.
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, I get that at the Comedy Cellar. Has anybody, did your dad or you ever say you can't say that on stage?
Not really. No. I mean, there have been times. Yes. The only thing I've ever said is when somebody was personally attacking a member of the audience. It wasn't a joke. When they would, you know, when a performer would lose control of themselves and just get a little too nasty with a member of the audience, like saying, "I hope you get cancer," or, you know, something like that.
Do tell.
I would ask them not to do that anymore.
Was that to hecklers, or just they would, you know, pick it on an individual? Because there are people in the audience that sometimes say pretty vile
things.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, no, it wouldn't be to someone who really had it coming.
Right.
It would be to somebody, whatever. I mean, it doesn't. But
sometimes comics flip out because somebody's talking during their set, and I've seen comics get a little bit more, I think, aggressive than the situation would warrant. Yeah. You know.
But even with a heckler who has it coming, the best comics know how to handle that without tanking the whole fucking show.
Right.
And some people think, well, this guy crossed the line with me. Now I have a get out of jail free card to say anything else I want, even something that nobody can recover from for the next 90 minutes.
Right.
And that's not okay. I mean, we all know that. But having said that, no, I've heard comedians, and there are comedians who say stuff that actually I cringe a little bit that I think is a little over the line, but I don't say boo. I just let it go.
There's also some deep hypocrisy here, right? Because part of what is celebrated about stand-up is that, and Noam, we've talked about this before on the show too, is the art form calls to get as close to that line as possible. And if you can't play with that line, you don't know where it is. And also, like, you know, Dave Chappelle went crazy in his last special and nobody, you know, there was no effect for that. So I think corporations pick and choose what they want to be scandalized by, and then they just move on, and it's fucking bullshit.
Well, I think the line is something that should be crossed. There is a line drawn. It's not just going
just
up to the line.
I was
going
to say that, Mr. Havey.
Stepping over the line. How did Chappelle go crazy?
Chappelle didn't say anything that one would normally get reprimanded.
Yes, he did. He said that. He said Michael Jackson's victims were lucky to be molested by Michael Jackson, and that kind of thing.
Well, that, I mean, in that context of the show, that was fucking funny.
Oh, I'm not criticizing that.
I'm just saying. 100%. You know, I mean, their parenting skills went out the door.
We know what he was saying, yes. You know? And yet people do not understand the humor in that joke.
They should watch Netflix or play with their coloring books, and that's it.
Right, and be
like,
triggered.
Yeah, I love Christopher Hitchens. When Christopher Hitchens, when anyone said,
"I'm
offended,"
he was a big fan of the women.
Christopher Hitchens would say, "I don't get your point. What's your point? I'm offended. What's your point?" You know, yeah. And I know he wasn't. He just said that women weren't funny, and that's bullshit. But you know, being offended, I'm offended comedically. I'm only offended at a comedian when he does a lame joke, or I know he stole a joke or a derivative joke. That is the only thing that really offends me.
That is in this book. That is a chapter in the book about how fucking lazy, shitty comics ruin it for all of us.
Well, they don't ruin it. They just ruin it for the audience.
Okay, can I be hyperbole here?
Hyperbolic, yes.
Shut up, Maddie! Okay,
kids at home, working
well
on your vocabulary, the word is hyperbolic.
I was saying hyperbolic, and then I had to say shut the fuck up and then I had a brain fart, sorry.
Okay, go ahead.
So hyperbolicus.
No, I'm just saying, I whatever, I can't, because the dog won't shut the fuck up.
Yeah, I know, this is the pandemic. This is what happens. A dog barks and I'm not, and you lose your train of thought.
I know.
You know, someone cuts in front of you in traffic and you go bonkers.
Right.
We're all kind of very sensitive right now. Very similar to when comedians are on stage doing their act and somebody starts fucking talking.
Yes.
So, but I'm okay.
Go ahead, Judy, be hyperbolic.
I don't know. What were we talking about?
You were talking about how shitty comedians ruin.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry.
Lazy comedians, a bad joke.
Lazy comic. Someone who, you know, spews racial epithets or lazily writes a joke and then blames the audience. You know, I'm sorry. It's really upsetting to me.
Well, a lot of young comics now kind of make statements. There's not even a
right. There's not a joke. Exactly.
The last open mic I went to, and I just listened. I didn't go on. And I was talking to young comedians, and I said, well, you've got to get to a point where it's funny. You know, this is not just a conversation you overheard at a Chinese restaurant.
Right.
So that's the only thing that really offends me from stand-up comedians. And I think your book, does it concentrate mostly on comedians on stage? And not necessarily like Roseanne and Kathy Griffin, who did something across the media.
Does. Yes, comedians on stage. Yes, right. That is the. Also, as far as the line is concerned, oftentimes we don't know where the line is until we've crossed it, and we go, "Okay, it's not funny anymore." Okay, but you know, we need the audience for that. We need the audience for stuff, and yet they're gonna getting fucking pissed off at us. No. No.
Chappelle knew where the line is, and he put his big foot over it. Fantastic. Right.
Really, there shouldn't be any line. I mean, nobody needs to get canceled. The audience is not going to accept something that's ugly. They're not. However it is that they have their antenna, and it's not just on the words. Is the whatever that vibe is, however they can tell the difference between Chappelle and a comedian who really does hate or whatever it is, the audience will get it right. And if the audience is enjoying it, then it should be allowed to continue.
Right.
I don't see a Comedy Cellar audience, a comedian killing with hateful, ugly humor. I don't see it. I don't see it happening.
Right, because it doesn't
Cellar. I could imagine it happening in certain contexts.
Yes.
And certain places, not at the Cellar.
Not at the Cellar.
Let them. Who cares? Can I relax knowing that there's some anti-Semitic pocket in America where they're laughing at the same Jewish jokes that I tell with my Jewish friends privately? I mean, I just don't care. Maybe I should care. I just don't care.
Yes, but what about the black jokes?
You know, that is harsher. I agree. A black person would have to answer that. I tend to think, I don't know, if there's some community where people are telling really ugly black jokes at a comedy club, I don't know, what do we think about that? I mean, I put it this way, you're not going to change those attitudes by stopping the comedy club.
What happens then when SNL gets wind of it or Netflix gets wind of it and says, well, we're not doing business with this individual anymore, or when the networks get wind of it. So
yeah, I mean, you're right. The problem is there's always a hypothetical which breaks a reasonable conversation. You can always compare something to Hitler or this and that. And yeah, there's some things which are so obviously wretched. Now that you would agree. On the other hand, those things tend to only exist. This in a hypothetical world. It's not like you really have an example.
No, there's very few examples of a comedian saying something wretched. And when he does, the audience will respond with, whoa!
Yeah.
Or silence.
Yeah.
There are examples of comedians saying things that might be wretched if they were serious, but they weren't necessarily serious.
Right. And when you get an audience on a roll and you're cooking, you can really manipulate it and say a lot of things you wouldn't say maybe in a regular set. Once they buy you, they know what you're about, and they know you're a comedian because there's a sign behind you that says Comedy Club.
And sometimes it's difficult to distinguish between the comedian talking and a character that the comedian has created. So I think the best example would be Dice. Clay, back in the late 80s, early 90s, played his character was the character of a misogynist from Brooklyn. And this is in Judy's book, I gather, because she's pointing at it. And so
the whole thing, I talk about him a lot. Yeah. Now he has every right to do it.
So he would talk about misogynist stuff. And Was it him? Was it Andrew Dice Clay?
No, it wasn't Andrew Silverstein.
It was Andrew Dice Clay. So you have to make that distinction.
Right. So there's a chapter in the book called There's a Reason It's Called an Act.
Yeah. I mean, comedy is a little bit of an interesting hybrid because sometimes it is us talking and sometimes it's a character that we've created talking and sometimes it's kind of both mixed together. You know, obviously David Tell never really buried his girlfriend in Jersey, which is one of
actually,
as far as we know, but
I drove him.
But he borrowed my shovel.
So let's say there's some comedian working at the Comedy Cellar, and we look at that video of Charlottesville from 2 years ago or 3 years ago.
Right.
And he's carrying a fucking tiki torch, saying the Jews will not replace me, replace us, whatever it is. He's an authentic Nazi sympathizer, and then he wants to go on the stage and tell, you know, knock knock jokes. And
what's the punchline? See, yeah. That's the thing. What's the point? Yes. If he's got a good joke.
I agree. If you can talk about anything, make it funny. If especially the most subversive stuff, it has to be funny. Funny, funny.
And not just funny to you.
Right.
Judy.
Of course, funny is a trial and error process. So it might not be funny. But, it, you know, not everything's going to be funny.
Well, when Dice Clay has a Madison Square Garden, this is back in the mid-80s. Okay, when he was up there, Hickory Dickory Dock, the chick is sucking my, you know, all those things. And the audience is roaring. And I'm looking, I go, well, I don't find it funny, but they do. You know, I don't think it's great comedy, but they do. So, you know, it's very democratic.
But also, but you knew where the joke was. Like, there's so many times now. Like there's people I'm like, all right, I don't think that's funny, but I know where the joke is. I get, okay, that's right. What the joke is. But there's so many people now, I don't know where the joke, like, and I always know where the joke is.
Well, that's another book though.
Okay.
I'm just letting you know, you're ready for, where's the joke?
Where's the fucking joke? Like you can't just lazily do shit and then, I don't know.
I think having someone who you know is an actual real life Nazi, you know, perform is a different thing than having someone quote unquote canceled because you don't like the kind of jokes they're telling.
Right.
Okay. But let's examine that. I mean, like,
you hypothetically, has a Nazi ever performed at your club?
They're not funny.
No,
they're only well-dressed.
My knowledge.
I mean, I know there are comedians who are racist and misogynistic to the core, but they go on stage and they tell jokes about their wife, and they're very funny.
Right. Essie does a good job of weeding out the Nazis, but she could smell a Nazi. But anyway, but hypothetically, it's just an interesting question. First of all, I would just say this guy is horrible, and I could actually see myself. I don't give a shit if he has some stupid Nazi points of view. I would just, you know, so much of it is about looking right to your friends. Like, if I thought it would actually prevent Nazism in America, if I thought, like, maybe I would do my part. But America, we give ourselves, I mean, we have a First Amendment. There's total free expression. The Nazis are totally free to say what they want. Some guy who's a Nazi by day and tells jokes by night. Do I need to punish him for that? Do I need to make sure he doesn't work? I know most Jews would tell me, yes, you have to do that. And maybe it's a defective reflex in me. But I'm like, I could just compartmentalize it. Because I'll tell you something. I've taught it before. Now people are going to get mad. But like when I had musicians coming in wearing Farrakhan t-shirts, right at the time that Farrakhan was praising Hitler, if I had kicked one of them out, people would have called me a racist. They would tell me I was nuts, you know? So it's really, you know, if you really start examining it, you can make a hypocrite out of anybody. So I'm like, what the fuck? I it's like in the criminal law, they say better to have a 100 guilty men go free than one innocent man be convicted. And I kind of feel that way about all these free speech things. It's like better to have some horrible person get away with working than to start sniffing around to try to find out who shouldn't be working.
Right.
Because believe me, the second you're, you are you are given the task of making sure, the responsibility of making sure certain people shouldn't be working, you're going to find certain people who shouldn't be working.
Right.
And half of the time, you're going to be unfair.
It's like when you give a network notes.
Work. I don't give a shit what you do.
When you hand someone at a network notes on your sitcom and they're 28 years old, it's their job to find out problems in that script, even though they have no idea what they're doing.
Right.
And they will find. Face a situation where you found somebody so disagreeable personally that it affected your decision to let them on stage?
No, I'm gifted. I mean, I'm gifted with my father's gene on that. I can easily, it doesn't matter what, I mean, the guy who banged my wife, he was suspended for 2 weeks.
wait, who banged your wife?
I can't talk about it. He's an A-lister, but
but this is before she was your wife, right?
I'm kidding.
Oh my god!
I'm kidding. I'm just saying that I could compartmentalize.
Who got to Juanita before I did? That's what I was.
Hold on, I will tell you this is actually true.
I was with Juanita.
That my father did have a musician who banged his wife. In a long story, and he did look past it.
How many women was your dad banging at the time?
Well, that was not my father didn't do it because he didn't want to be a hypocrite. That wasn't the reason behind it. But I'm just saying, like, you know, you could just let things go. It is possible. You know, it's just in a certain way, you can create the feeling yourself like, look at me, I'm actually superior because he thinks he's blah, blah, blah. And I'm actually letting him go on stage, and I'm making the money, right? I'm running the successful business. So fuck him. Let him do. Let him say what he wants. Let him be a Nazi. I don't care.
Now here's a hypothetical: Has there been a comedian at the club over the years, even when your dad was there, who brought a poisonous attitude to the table and to the other comedians, and was just a drag? Not so much on stage, but they were just a drag to be around, and people didn't like them. Have you ever said, you know, let's not have that guy back here anymore?
No, I've never done that, but I did. I'll talk about it because it got out recently. I did suspend somebody for 2 weeks for some tweets after like the third warning that were making the atmosphere within the cellar just too difficult. They were kind of stink bombs into the family atmosphere of the Comedy Cellar, and I was like, listen, if you want to tweet that way about another comic who works here. I just, you know, the house divided can't stand. So you're not gonna be able to work here while you do that. You're free to do that.
Right, but that's that, just like the corporations.
Yeah, but that wasn't any kind of permanent suspension. And truthfully, I never wanted it to come to that. But at some point I realized it was going to bring the house down. We couldn't have that going on. And I figured it would go away and it did.
I don't think that's like
the pandemic, everything went away.
What's that?
I want to know exactly who that was. And
well, I'll tell you. I'll chat it. I mean, everybody knows. I'm getting chats. I see three chats right now.
Oh, I didn't even see
that. I don't think that's like the corporations, because I feel like Noam said to them, you know, please don't do this while you're working here. The corporations are just like firing.
He suspended them.
Well, Noam's bottom line. It was a question of harmony in the community. Noam didn't want fights breaking out upstairs. You know,
well, that's what I meant by my question. Yeah, anybody that, you know, kind of poisons the goodwill there and the familiar feel of the place.
That's very different than like Gilbert making a joke that Affleck, you know, freaks out about.
No, I know that. I'm just saying that the fact that Noam had to say, look, cut the shit out, or, you know.
Yeah.
And I have a responsibility there. But that has nothing to do with my personal feelings or offense or anything like that. It's just like the same thing if the audience hates them or, you know, whatever. I mean, I have to run a smooth ship there. And
How do you respond to comments when through your website and people say, hey, we saw this comedian, we were offended by what he said. What is your response to that?
I've written some emails. I defend the comedian almost always, except in the times when I thought the comedian attacked somebody. In which case, I've apologized. You know, I said, right, and they said, we demand that you don't work. I said, listen, I'm not going to tell him to stop working, but I'm sorry he said that. I'm always honest about this. If I were you, I'd be upset too. Like when somebody made some really horrible comment about somebody's girlfriend being ugly or something like that.
No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about in their act. They do their act. There's no heckling. There's no personal attack.
I always say the comedian side. Always.
That happened not that long ago. It was with Sam Morril and that alligator joke, right?
Yeah.
What's the alligator joke?
Well, there was a little boy that was killed by an alligator in Florida, and Sam made a joke, I guess you arguably making light of that situation. This was, I guess, whenever that happened a couple years ago. And so they complained to the Comedy Cellar, and you said what, Noam? Or
I don't remember. I could look up the email and play on the next show, but I defended Sam, you know, in a better joke.
Sympathetic to her as well.
I'll tell you this. I can't tell you how many times I've answered a very nasty email very honestly without getting nasty myself, and then got back another email where the person apologized or backed down or thanked me. Yeah, very, very common, even with the Louis stuff. Almost half the people, I would say, who sent me, you know, horrible emails, when I answered them and I made my case, would say, you know, I hadn't thought of that. You're right. I never thought you'd answer me, but I respect you for that. Yeah.
What do you say to the people who are like, I was there, I bought tickets, and then Louis walked in and he ruined it for me.
Sorry, that was Louis calling. No, I'm kidding. I give them their money back. That's what we do. We give them their money back.
Right. But then what if they write you? Like, what would you write back to them? If you got one of those letters,
some form of that argument that I was making at the time about that I don't understand, you know, what kind of standard there is, and we tell people they don't have to stay, and we give them their money back. But what a willing performer and a willing audience want to do is not other people's business,
right.
And It really matches the tone and the specifics of the email that I get.
Right.
And quite often also I would send them like the New York Times podcast that I did where I kind of did a good job of stating my case, and people would listen to it and then they would write me back. But anyway, just the real point is that people write sometimes when they're in the heat of their anger.
Right, of course.
We all have. And even on their own, the next day they're like, oh shit, maybe I shouldn't have gone that far, you know, or you can't judge. They have to get to a certain point. The kettle has to be whistling for them to write. And naturally that's their extreme, you know, that's not even where the average are. So it gives you a false sense of what a person might actually be like.
Gotcha.
Anyway.
I'm
looking for the Sam Morril thing.
Okay, yeah. While you're looking for Sam Morril, we've been talking a lot about this James Altucher piece when Jerry Seinfeld's reply.
Yes.
And James Altucher's counter-reply. And then Danny Zolden, another owner of the club, in the New York Post today, said that Seinfeld's not nice and, you know, he was being mean.
Wow. Seinfeld's not nice?
Wait, what?
Wow.
You're not aware of this whole exchange?
Yes. No, I read.
I saw Seinfeld's. Wait, so what happened today?
Well, James wrote another article saying Seinfeld's not paying it, you know, that Seinfeld's shooting the messenger, essentially. That James said, well, I'm sorry to deliver bad news, but that's how I interpret the situation, that New York is in big, big trouble.
Well, no, he said, oh, it's over. It's not coming back.
And I don't
it's
even think he believed the same. It, by the way. I think he
yeah,
was-
and I've moved to Miami and all my friends are moving away. It was just a hysterical little article. And Jerry, I thought with great wit and articulation, who he's been in my mind, or what I've seen for the last 40 years, you know, responded to the article. And I thought, his opinion was spot on.
Yes, although I didn't think Jerry needed to be quite as personal in his attacks. But I know a lot of people don't like James personally, and so they don't divorce
but his also
opinion from
Right. He wrote the most negative article. And also, here we are claiming we're a comedian, right? He's one of these guys who's made a shitload of money. And then, oh, I like comedy. I think I'll do comedy.
So he's a shadow artist as far as comedy
goes? Doesn't bother me. I'm sort of flattered that somebody that's so capable in another industry thinks so much of our industry that they want to be a part of it.
But I understand that. But I think what I'm saying, but Seinfeld is coming from a whole different mindset. Like, this guy is saying, I'm a comedian, I'm this, I'm that. And
he wasn't saying that, though. That's not what James was saying. James, whatever James was saying, he was saying it wasn't even as a comic. I mean, and Seinfeld was like, you're a putz, and this is, you know, whatever, and you could spruce up your club, which wasn't very nice, frankly. And then they wrote back and they said, well, you know, that's nice. You know, we're actually the biggest producer of stand-up shows in New York City right now. We're putting on 5 shows a night. And
in Central Park?
Yeah. Yes. And we, you know.
Another park.
And
every park, yeah. And I'm reading it now.
And we walked past your vintage Porsche collection while you're sitting in your like mansion in the Hamptons. So you
it has nothing to do with the article. Seinfeld talked about coming to New York in 76. He's a New Yorker, and we all know he's made a lot of money, and he doesn't respond to everybody that puts down New York. But the article that James wrote, I thought was a little hysterical, and doomsday, and everyone I know is moving out, and the city is not coming back. And it was pretty severe opinion about what he thought was happening. And Jerry was responding as a New Yorker and a comedian. Well, so I didn't have a problem with Seinfeld.
I mean, look, I'm a lifelong New Yorker too. And I found the article to be very upsetting also.
I was upset by it as well.
You're talking about James' article or Seinfeld's article?
No,
Altuchner?
Altucher.
Has he ever performed to the Comedy Cellar? No. I know he's been there a lot.
No, he hasn't.
He performed to the club that he's a part owner in. But
is he any good?
He's not bad, but he's new, you know.
Yeah.
Judy is shaking her head.
And by the way, people in all industries are fascinated by stand-up comedy. It's great that he wanted to buy a club and he keeps that club going.
No, I understand
but
that.
Everybody,
but, you know, but
they
I,
look
I
at
also,
us. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Judy. No. I was talking, but you just cut me off. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No. I'm just saying that people in just about every industry in the world look at comedians with a little bit of awe. Like, how do you do that? You know, and so
right.
That's pretty normal.
I understand that, but then you don't. Would he get stage time if he didn't own a club? Like, we came from nothing and started.
Not.
Right. But it's like, you're talking like, oh, yeah, I'm a comedian. And it's like, you know, I go back to being 19 and hanging out at the back of Catch a Rising Star, you know, and going on at 3 o'clock in the morning. Like, sorry.
Okay, we're getting off. The only thing that I wanted to say was that I had a whole thing with Noam today because they said that Seinfeld wasn't nice. And I said that, you know, I don't like this idea that because Seinfeld, he can be a jerk and not be nice. And Noam said, well, that's ridiculous. Seinfeld can be however he wants and anybody can be however he wants. And what I wanted
to say. I said more than that, but I'll let you finish and I'm going to correct you. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, you. Why break a pattern? Why don't you correct me now?
Okay, because listen. First of all, that she was reading me some Instagram thing from the guy who owns Stand Up New York with Altucher.
Danny.
Yeah, and he said this thing how he bought Seinfeld 2 gift baskets from Zabar's and Seinfeld never even thanked him and like I mean just the most and then he came in and he wasn't nice and I'm like. Listen, Seinfeld doesn't take a stage for less than a couple hundred grand, right? And he walks in there and he plays your club. And all you should be saying, in my opinion, is thank you, Mr. Seinfeld. Thank you so much. Don't fucking expect something from him. Don't tell him he's got a, this guy who's one of the most famous people in the world, who's got to have people coming up to him every 5 seconds. And God forbid that people see him being really, really friendly to people in the restaurant. Then everybody's going to be coming up to him. And some people are cut out that way. Some people are, you know, like Ray Romano, are just like, they can handle that kind of but he can't. And by the way,
who can't?
Seinfeld. And Alan, you knew him before he was famous.
Listen, I knew him before, during, and now, and I've seen him in the cellar, and he handles everything with a palm. Same way with Chris Rock and Chappelle. There's no entourage. There's no bodyguard.
But he's not like looking for people. He doesn't enjoy everybody coming up to him and talking to him.
Who does?
Right. Well,
I'm not famous, and I don't like it.
So I'm not. Get me wrong. I was defending him. I'm saying that's who he is.
So that's
this fucking guy sends him a couple of Zabar's baskets, and the guy Seinfeld comes into his club, and he has the nerve to complain about anything that Seinfeld does. I'm like, there's a Jewish joke about this sort of thing, and it's not kind of.
My God, you know, he didn't even write a thank you note.
It's like I was cringing just as like, just shut up. What, you're really complaining about Seinfeld not being nice enough when he came in to play your fucking club?
We're cherry picking the article. Putz fits perfectly in there. It just kind of, Jerry, go, will you stop it, you Putz? And by the way, you could straighten up your club a little bit. It was kind of a funny aside.
Right.
I agree with Noam. Hey, Jerry, thank you for the comments. We're fixing up the club. And when you come back to New York, we hope we see you here. That's all you say.
Yes, maybe so. But the only thing that I wanted to say about that is that I think that no matter who you are, it's okay to be a little bit nice, even if it's annoying. And my real point after
that, Perry L.
No, I'm serious. I have been working.
It wasn't very nice, Noam.
He's not obligated to talk to people when he comes to
it's
the
not club. About
I've seen Jerry Seinfeld many different times be very nice to people.
Yes.
And every now and then, you can't be nice all the time. And I thought it was a lovely article, and it was very, I thought it was all benign.
I took it as, and you know, when you read something, you don't necessarily know the tone of it. I thought it was a bit harsh. I thought it was a bit harsh toward James, especially you said, you know, stay in Florida. We don't need you. And what a fitting punishment for you to be stuck in Florida in a soulless place like Florida. I'm paraphrasing. I did think it was a bit harsh, and he could have made the exact same points without calling James a putz. But I also agree with Noam that when he comes into the club, he's not obligated to be friendly to everybody. Some people are. Robin Williams was friendly to everybody, so much so that I thought there was some. It was bizarre almost, the extent that he was friendly with everybody.
I think people ought to take their energy that they expend judging other people and work on themselves. I mean, if Seinfeld actually was aggressively not nice to somebody, that would be different. But he's there minding his own business, eating his chicken skewers, and somebody comes up to him, interrupts him eating, and he's a little, doesn't ingratiate, doesn't make the person feel comfortable about it, or is a little cold. And say, aha, now we got Seinfeld. How about the fucking guy? How about the fucking guy who doesn't have the self-awareness to say, why would I walk up to this man eating his fucking chicken skewer? Let me tell you something, Perel.
Here's why people do that.
Well, let me finish. Well, hold the thought. Okay. Let me say, right. When I don't approach anybody, including the most famous people in the world who come into my club, you see me, I don't bother them because I say to myself, what do they want to speak to me for? Like, why, what is it? Am I doing this just for my sake so I can go home and tell my kids I spoke to Kevin Hart? Or are they really interested in speaking to me? I say, nah. Kevin Hart's not interested in speaking to me. He has nothing against me. So I leave him alone. That's what a mensch does. Leave people the fuck alone. Especially someone as famous as Seinfeld, who you know. It is so selfish to walk up to somebody who's famous, who's eating their dinner, and think they have to perform to be nice for you. What, do you think they're sincerely happy to see you? It's
okay,
ridiculous.
So first of all,
let Alan say what he wants
this
to say.
This is why
I agree with you. I'm just saying the article was needlessly harsh in my
opinion. I have a comment
on
that.
I don't think it was harsh at all.
I don't either. I don't think it was harsh
at all. I think
it
was very funny and good for him. And I love it because I love New York as much as Jerry and most of you. I love New York City.
And
we look at London during the war and the English people. They got through a blitz. You know, they were just bombed every night for like 42 nights. New York is going to get through this.
I agree with that. I don't agree with James' article at all. I think New York City is going to be just fine. And what I'm trying to say has nothing to do with coming up to somebody who's eating dinner. It has nothing to even do with Jerry Seinfeld. My point is that if you're a very famous performer, it's okay to be a little bit more like Robin Williams. And my point to you, if I could fucking get it out after a conversation this afternoon, was if that were about a woman, like, they would be like, oh, she is such a fucking bitch. And that's really, that's true.
That is true. I have to say.
I know. Okay. But now
that's
we're
not
going
what
down
we're talking
river.
About. I kind of enjoyed the snarkiness.
So let me comment on the harsh. You want to say? Go ahead, Judy.
No, I just want to say, you know, piggybacking on Alan, which I've always wanted to do, that I enjoyed the snarkiness in Jerry's article. You don't see that side of him.
That's why we like him, because he's a comedian. He's snarky.
Okay, so let me
let me get back to my point. And why do people go up? They go up mostly to comedians or comedic actors like Bill Murray or Robin Williams. Or if you go into a restaurant and you see Meryl Streep, hey, that's Meryl Streep over there. Where? Over there. Oh, wow, I love her work. But if you see Bill Murray, hey, Bill, because they look at you, because Jerry Seinfeld, he's been in my home thousands of times. Totally. I love this guy.
And that is also in the book, the way people treat comedians as opposed to other celebrities. In my book,
because we hit a nerve. Jerry and his show have hit a nerve with people, and they love him.
Right, and they think they know him, and they think they know him.
Have a certain personality.
You be the one person that walks by Jerry Seinfeld and don't say anything. I'm with Noam on this.
Oh, I totally agree with that. Also, I also feel like I've sat at dinner tables with everyone from, I'm sorry to name drop a little bit, but just to really dig my fucking heels in here, with everyone from like Perry Farrell to Lenny Kravitz. And, you know, it's nice to see people being nice and humble when they don't have to be. People can be whatever the fuck they want.
Right, but Lenny Kravitz is not a comedian. So he's not thinking about his act, like, I'm gonna do a set, I'm in my head right now. It's a whole different mindset.
I mean, it depends when, right? Context is everything.
So if Jerry's at Stand-Up New York working on a new set and is like in his head, like, oh, I want to make sure.
Yes, of course.
He doesn't care about Zabars. He's got plenty of Zabars at home.
Right, of course.
Noam, you wanted to talk about the article itself and whether it was too harsh or not.
There was a lot. This is zooming out past, I can't find his email. Zooming out past Seinfeld, there was a reflex against Altucher's article that I didn't personally feel, so I didn't understand it, which was anger at a guy who was making a case I didn't agree with, but, you know, was making it in a way that's within, like, intellectually accepted argument. And he didn't attack anybody personally, and people came at him very, very hard, including this comment about your club, you know, you might straighten up a bit, which would have, you know, that would have, I would have been depressed for a month if Seinfeld had written that about me in the New York Times.
Not for a month.
It would have hit me very, very, very hard, especially if he had done that when I felt I was just, you know, I was just
writing an article
about what I thought in LinkedIn of all places, you know, kind of under the radar about what I thought the future of New York was. And
the chicken skewers take all that away.
Yeah. But,
the good food, take it all away.
Been many articles along the lines of James's. So, but on the other hand, there is something to what somebody said. I don't remember which one of you said it, which is that there is a certain way that you receive a comedian's remark, which, you know, it's not quite as serious as it's said because you rib each other. That's what comedians do.
Yes, listen, this is not the first time Jerry heard this. He heard, like, oh, stand-up is over. Everything's done. New York is going to go away.
Right, right.
And so then he sees this prominent article in the New York Post, right, that's it. That's bullshit.
By someone saying he's a comic, by the way.
Okay, well, good
that
for him.
That might have struck a nerve. That might
have struck a nerve. Might have struck a nerve. I'm not saying I read Jerry's mind, but I thought it was a terrific piece. And, you know, I agree with him. And, you know, I love New York. Listen, not to drop a name, and I'm not going to, but I was with a comedy legend having lunch in Las Vegas.
Alan, no, you can say my name.
No. And a couple people came up. One guy came up and said, can I get a picture? And he said, I'm sorry, I don't like to take pictures with people I don't know, which was very, and he was very nice about it. He said, you got it. You know, this very respect guy in the business. Then another guy came up, asked the same thing, and he gave him the answer, but he insisted, no, come on. And then he finally acquiesced. And then the chef came out of the kitchen. I heard you were out here. We made you the special dessert. And I picked up the tab. So this guy left, but I doubt that he'll probably go back again. He doesn't want the chef coming out. You know, he didn't say anything, and he's an amiable guy, but people can be real dicks.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I totally agree with that, too. People are morons.
But it's also different celebrities have different personalities. You know, like when I, all right, and stop, and I know you're going to make fun of me when I say this, but when I did several shows with Florence Henderson. Okay, shut up, everyone. Shut the fuck up. But
wow.
Every person who came up to her, no matter what, she stopped. She used to write back to every person who wrote to her. Like, this is a person who was like, these are my fans, and I will stop. And but every fucking time.
Okay.
And then I've been with other prominent comedians who were like, no, I'm sorry, it's not a good time.
Okay, so this is the thing. Is the thing.
When you see the weatherman, your local weatherman, you go, hey, there's the local weatherman.
Right.
You know, it's,
I want to make a point. You have to be realistic about human nature. Jerry Seinfeld has a particular sensibility of humor. And it would be very unusual for that dry, kind of sarcastic, skeptical wit to inhabit the body of somebody who was like, hey, come on, I'll take a picture with you. They don't go together. I don't imagine Larry David is super friendly either when he sees people. And you're asking the impossible. You have personality types, and they produce certain art, and it's related, and enjoy the art, and leave them alone about expecting them to transform who they are. They are who they are. Leave them the fuck alone. They don't owe you anything.
Right.
I agree with that. Like, you know, Jerry says, listen, I did what? How many episodes of Seinfeld? What more do I have to give?
Yeah.
I've done all these episodes of Seinfeld. I've done all these comedy specials. I've been performing live for 40 years. What more do I have to do for you?
Just leave me alone.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, Seinfeld barely says boo to me when he comes in, and I never thought twice about it. Occurred to me. It's like, well, of course, why should he?
No, your point is interesting, but I don't think people actually, you said that Seinfeld's act should be Clue that he's not the warmest guy in the world. And maybe that seems
everybody's obvious. Act is related to their personality is what I'm
saying.
Yes,
but I don't know that people necessarily know this. And I remember years ago when I met David Tell, and David, if anybody's act said, leave me alone, it's David Tell. And I walked up going, Dave, I love you. And he's like, yeah, really? Or whatever he said.
Really?
Really?
This was before I was even doing comedy. And it was very dismissive. And I was shocked because I just assumed that that he would be, you know, nice. And I didn't. But that's an instance where his act should have clued me in if I were a little bit more aware that maybe he's.
And you were a young comic? Dan?
I was just starting. I had
That's
understandable. Now, and I thought, that's just an act, but.
Be careful. Dave's going to put this into one of his bits.
Really?
You see him as a musician, like, you know, like the greatest drummers or bass players I ever played with. They were mean fucking sons of bitches.
Yeah,
let me tell you.
That. I really don't. I don't think it takes that much energy to be a little bit.
No, I don't mean mean to people like that way. I mean, like, they had a fire going inside in their belly, and that would come out at various times, and people are, you know, can be more than one thing. They can be like that and still be very warm and gracious at other times. But they couldn't play like that without that thing. It's just, Seinfeld is Seinfeld. It's just remarkable to me that people, I mean, can you understand who should be? The guy says out in the public, I bought him two gift baskets from Zabar's and he didn't even thank me. What? I mean, this is so out of touch with himself.
Well, that's ego. That's his ego. And people that come up and say, well, I went up to Seinfeld and he didn't say hello. Well, that's, you know, that's your ego. Like, why should he?
Well, I don't know that.
And now I feel bad saying this about the guy standing in New York, because now he's going to feel, I feel bad. I didn't mean to attack him.
I'm going to edit it out.
And if he did get a thank you note, Seinfeld would tell his assistant to write the thank you note anyways. Like, Seinfeld is not sitting down and taking out a thank you card and writing it for a gift basket. Go ahead. I found the email if anyone wants to hear it.
There's a fine line between acknowledging that your fans are the reason you're successful and having some gratitude and some sense that without your fans, you have nothing, and your right to your own privacy. I mean, it's a balance and it's tricky and it's not, you know, different people handle it differently. I mean, I do think to the extent practical, you should be cordial to those without whom you would have no career at all.
Right, but here's the thing. The only responsibility you have to your fans is go up there and do the best damn job you can to prep and work. That's it. After that, it's all gravy.
I really do have a question, though. I mean, I've never understood why people go up to people and ask them for their autographs or things like that, but there's an entire culture around, like, you know, even like, to make a wish foundation, like people are dying to meet these, you know, people who to them right. are heroes, right?
It's part of the culture, but they think they know that there's got to be a boundary at some, you know.
I totally agree with you. I just think that like the type of person that's going to go up to Jerry Seinfeld and be like, oh my God, I had to tell you, I love your show, is not really thinking along the lines of what we're discussing right now.
Well, they should.
Well, maybe.
Well, no, I understand
right.
where
you
people.
You gotta put yourself in someone else's shoes.
Yeah, if you run into Jerry Seinfeld, it's gonna have some. Oh my God, Jerry Seinfeld! Hey, how are you?
Hand him a whitefish salad bagel.
Right, but New Yorkers are known to be like, "Oh, there's Jerry Seinfeld."
Totally.
Because. Yeah. But people in, like, God knows, you know, Idaho are probably like, oh my God, you know, or however they talk, who the fuck knows, but yeah.
So you want to hear that? Are you interested in the email I the Samuel
yes.
thing?
Yes, yes.
So you want to hear? Actually, do you want to hear the original email too?
Well, let's, you can play the clip. It's super short.
Noam is going to read an email he got a while ago about Sam Morrell's joke about a little boy being eaten by an alligator.
Well, she wrote to me, okay, you want blunt? I'll be blunt. I had the worst comedy experience of my life at your venue last night. A disgusting person. I won't call him a comedian because he's not humorous. Sam Morrell took the stage and spent the first few minutes of his act disrespecting Lane Graves, the two-year-old child who was murdered by the alligator at Disney. He even cracked jokes about his parents. She puts quote jokes in scare quotes about his parents and his funeral. I have never in my life been so offended and repulsed by someone. I immediately left and stopped to tell your staff why. They followed me to make sure my drinks were being paid, not because I had just had to listen to a sick man trying to use a child's death as pathetic shock value attempt at being at a pathetic shock value attempt at being a comedian. Furthermore, upon speaking with friends who worked for a comedy club over 10 years, I learned that your venue had to know his set prior to him taking the stage, which meant someone approved this garbage. You should be ashamed of yourselves too. The girl who was introducing all the acts simply replied to my outrage with, quote, different people are offended by different things. Oh, really? I would expect all human beings would be offended at my, she's the typo, by a sicko making jokes about a two-year-old baby's tragic death, saying his mother probably said, later, Gator, at his funeral. I feel like the last, you know, the Chuckles the Clown Mary Tyler Moore show here.
You know, I hand my...
He got shelled as a peanut.
Well, it's true.
Wait, I'm not finished. not finished. I have posted about this on every social media account I own and asked people to share it. The comedian himself replied to me to say, pretty strong act, huh? Tonight was my first time trying that one out. What a complete and utter pathetic excuse for a human. He doesn't deserve to breathe the same air or live on the same planet.
Oh my God.
As that precious little boy's family. So there's my review. The other acts were fine. I really enjoyed the staff girl who introduced everyone until I received her heartless, rude response to my feedback. She can fly a kite too.
Fly a kite?
Yeah. Okay. Wow. So here's my answer now. Now, having said it, I'm going to read the answer. I don't remember what I wrote. I hope it doesn't sound bad or but okay.
Okay.
You cunt.
Jane, you ignorant slut. Please forgive how, dear so-and-so, please forgive how long it has taken me to return your email. I'm a parent of two small children. I completely understand your reaction to Sam's jokes. Comedians generally hold nothing sacred. For them, the bizarre nature of this incident inspires a kind of gallows humor, which others may find offensive or just not funny. To be very clear, no, we don't approve of any comedian's material before they take the stage.
Can you imagine?
You note in your email that this was the first time he had told the joke. So not only did we not approve it, we had no way of knowing what he was going to say since he'd never said it before. But even if I had known he was going to say it, I have to tell you, I would not have intervened. I cannot censor the artists who appear at my venue. Believe me, sometimes I'd like to, but I can't. You simply can't imagine the resentment that I would engender if I were to tell a Louis C.K. who has done jokes about pedophilia that were controversial, or any other comedian, what they can or can't say. Stand-up comedy by nature lives close to the line. What one person considers thought-provoking, another considers irreverently funny, and another considers unacceptably offensive. It is simply impossible to lay down an objective standard that everyone could agree on. It's the reason the First Amendment is interpreted so broadly. It's virtually impossible to decide what speech is acceptable and what can be forbidden. In the end, it would all become about not offending me and my particular sensibilities. As a club owner, all I can do is stop booking a comedian if they are not doing well with the audience, and that determination can't be made after any one set that did or did not go well. All the comedians have bad sets and almost all offend someone at some time in their careers. Having said all that, it's no pleasure for me that you left unhappy. If there's anything I can do, perhaps refund your cover charges or invite you back to a better show, I put better in quotes, as my guest, just say the word. I hope this has been helpful to you in some way. Sincerely, blah, blah, blah. That was my answer.
That's a great response.
Yeah, that's a good response. Now, did you hear back from her?
I did, but I don't remember what she wrote. But the point is, I didn't back down.
Right.
I didn't back down at all.
I thought that was great.
I mean, that separates Noam from probably every other club owner. Can you imagine any other club owner having the eloquence?
No, it's always the customer's always right. Customer's always right.
To pen response like that, it'd be very
Noam is also a lawyer, and he's very smart.
And because the reason Noam's an accidental club owner. People with Noam's pedigree generally don't become comedy club owners.
Getting back to the First Amendment, it only protects us from government prosecution.
Yeah, but it's still valid as an analogy for like many things are.
I'm just saying that if someone doesn't like a 2-year-old getting eaten by an alligator, that shit's funny now.
But I will say that I mean, Noam, you were sympathetic to somebody being upset by that joke.
Of course.
I mean, that's pretty strong stuff. A little boy being eaten by an alligator, and I don't blame the woman for being upset. I couldn't blame her.
But she went on and on. Like, everybody else probably laughed, or they didn't. Right. She was the only one that got up and walked out. You know, I think she would.
But I would never laugh at her face and dismiss.
But here's the thing.
No. I would try to understand her, but also I think Noam struck just the right balance. I get that you're upset, but I can't censor my comics.
But it's also like, you can get up and walk out, just like you can change a channel, just like you can turn off the radio.
Exactly.
That doesn't mean that other person should never be able to work again.
And as far as a comedy seller goes, if you go to Noam, you get your money back.
And also, I send all my sets to Noam and Esty. They're all handwritten. And I have notes the minute I walk in.
All right. Well, anyways,
this is the fucking stupidest thing in the world. All right.
I was hoping to get to Kenosha, but that's such a big topic. We'll talk about it probably.
Oh, we got another 10 minutes. Go ahead.
What's Kenosha?
Kenosha.
It's in Wisconsin.
Oh, okay.
Oh, now that's that shooting.
Yes.
Yes. I mean, I don't know if that's.
Is this where we're going to tag the show with the shooting?
I think we should leave that for another episode. This has been a really good, tight episode. I think it's.
Yeah,
pretty-
I can't with that.
Comedy fans.
Yeah. Too soon, too. We don't know the facts. I mean, the facts are changing by the day. Let's talk about it when we know everything.
Okay.
Right. Have you already talked about Jeff Ross?
Well, we could, but.
Okay.
I just got asked. I just got interviewed about my book for Page Six, and then she asked me about that. And I was like,
yeah. Okay.
What did she ask you?
Just like all the cancel stuff. Like, what do you think of Jeff Ross? What do you think of Ellen? Mm-hmm. It's like, I want to just sell my book. I don't want to talk about, you know, Jeff Ross.
Judy, you have to be prepared for this. You've done PR
before. I know.
And it's a book about canceling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alan, do you have anything in particular you wanted to say about Jeff Ross?
No. First of all, thanks, Noam. After months of harassing him, I'm finally invited to this podcast, and I really appreciate it.
Alan, I want to tell you something. Perry will back me. I am in such a dark place.
I get it. That's why I don't blame you at all.
It is not personal.
I know it's not. I'm just glad I'm on. And I miss, like, you know, the thing with Jeff Ross or Ellen, this is what I miss about the table. Hearing right. people's opinions and people talking about it. I'm not trying to spotlight any one person. And Noam, you know, I contacted you. I didn't hear from you for a couple months. And I thought to myself, well, Noam is raising three young children. And, you know, he has a business and he's got to be going a little bit nuts. So I'm going to leave him alone.
Okay. But last time I did the podcast, Noam was like, I fucking hate this podcast. I'm not doing it anymore. And now...
I do Perry. I quit it every day. And I want to thank Judy, by the way. So when the thing with Louie happened, I didn't know who my friends would be, and I didn't expect. I was surprised that Judy was one of the first people not to come to Louie's side, but to come to the Comedy Cellar side, and she even agreed to co-host a podcast that we did early on where we had. Female staff members discussing how they felt about it, whether they felt unsafe, you know, at the club and whatever it was. And she, having a prominent female LGBTQ, I think that was all the letters at the time.
Pi sign.
D-Y-K-E.
At the time, just say that she thought that what I was doing was not on the face of it indefensible. That was very important to the club at the time. So I don't know if I thank you. It really was. I meant it.
Well, that's why I love comedians and certainly the atmosphere your dad started and you have enhanced and continued along with Esty and the staff that we care about each other, even if we disagree.
Yeah,
it's true. Yeah. And walking in there, I've said this on a number of interviews. It literally is like, I'm home. That's what it feels like. Like, even if I have a shit day, even if I'm like anxious or depressed, to walk in there, it's, you open that curtain.
Last time I was at the Comedy Cellar before the pandemic, I flew into New York. I shot an episode of Billions.
Okay, why do you have to?
And then that night, I went to the club and I was there late. I wasn't get my avails in. And Esty said, I'm sorry, no one's canceled. So I went over to the Village Underground and I watched the show. It was so goddamn funny. It was, and you're in a different head. When you're not going on, you're relaxed. And
right.
It was so great to be here.
Which speaks to Seinfeld being in his head
right.
at a comedy club.
And then I flew back here, went to Hermosa Comedy Magic. I did three spots on a Saturday, and then that was it. I haven't worked since then. And I can't go back to the Cellar.
Right.
I can't go back to Hermosa, which is my home out here. And it's been really tough, but we're going to get through this. And New York, it's all going to come back.
It is. I really, really, really believe that it is going to come back. I think there is no way that it's not.
Oh, big time. It's going to come back. I mean, comedy is going to be bigger than, I mean, because people really, I'm doing outdoor shows here. You can, I'm sold out every show. They are dying to laugh. Yeah. Dying.
Noam, can you pull up the artwork that I sent you, please?
Of Judy's book?
Yeah.
She hasn't. She just.
I know, but you can see it better when you pull it up.
Why? Well, I mean, yes.
I sent it to you in chat. Just so
in,
people.
Oh, in chat. I'm sorry. Okay. Yes, I'll pull that up right now to download it. Da, 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 da. And then I oh Jesus, open file.
Let me tell you where I'm appearing next. I'm going to go down my building, get the mail, and bring it back to the apartment. So if you want to catch me.
Oh, well, it's, you know, I don't know if you heard about the Postal Service.
That's another podcast.
Another podcast. What, when they came, whoops.
Full
screen mode.
There it is.
Okay. Wait, I want to take a picture for my.
It's very nice. No, I read the foreword today and most of the first chapter.
I think you'll love it. I mean, it really is everything we said.
Judy,
the trouble is I can hear your voice when I'm reading the book.
I know. And I did do the audiobook, so just lower the volume when you,
oh my God. You listen to this. By the way, you got to read Woody Allen's book. Anybody out there?
Oh, I've heard it's fantastic.
It is fantastic.
Okay, I'm writing that down.
I've also heard that it's, I'm sorry, I see your mouth moving, Dan, but I don't hear you. I also heard that it's very convincing defense of himself and his sexual accusations, although I was kind of thinking he did it, but I have to read it.
See, that's the thing. I read the Robert Whitey interview, which spells it out there, and his son Moses was in the house when it allegedly happened. And he's been writing about it for years. Nobody brings that up since the hashtag MeToo movement. No one has brought that up. And he was in the house. And Ronan Farrow was 4.
So he has no idea.
No.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a great read. It's a fun read.
For I can't wait. Reasons, I have to also say, enjoying Mary Trump's book.
Really?
Yeah. It's just so psychological. I love it. It's so.
Are you learning anything new about it? No.
Well, I have a house here, and she lived across the lawn here.
Where do you have a house?
In Provincetown, in Massachusetts, on Cape Cod.
Very gay area up there.
That my sister always says that. Watch out for the gays.
Would that be the fag capital of the world?
Oh, that's you're referring to the
baseball announcer.
Oh, right.
He got canceled. What do you think about that, Judy?
I don't like the word F.
The F. No, I mean, but ask a black gay guy which is worse, the F word or the N word.
Yeah, true. I don't think it's the capital here. Maybe. I don't know. There's a lot of.
Do you think the baseball announcer should have been fired? You're saying that? I mean, he said it off the air and it was a vile thing to say.
Yeah, it's
and
vile.
Yes, that's who he is.
What was vile to say?
It's the.
He said he referred to Kansas City, I believe, as the F capital of the world.
But the reason he should have been fired is because there's no way Kansas City is the F capital.
One second. How
exactly.
Old
I thought it was.
Yeah. How old is he?
In his 40s, I would say.
There's no excuse for that. So.
No, Judy, let's be honest now. When I was a kid, good, liberal, non-bigoted
people. I was a band fag. I used to call myself a band fag. Yeah,
would say fag. And forever. And like my father would say to Jonathan, the gay waiter, about the other, like, is he a fag? And Jonathan said, yeah, he's a fag. Like it was.
I agree.
That was a different time.
I have that in the book. I have that.
Well, it's a different time. But if my father were alive among his friends, I don't think, and there was nobody who was more pro-gay ahead of his time than my father was. I have no question you would have a hard time getting him not to say fag among people he trusted,
right,
who understood him and knew that he wasn't coming from a bad place. So,
right. Yeah. Context, intent, nuance.
Yeah. So I don't know what this guy said or what he meant by it, but that, you know, that is not, there was a time when that was not the N word. It just wasn't. And you know, you can, I mean, the intent is everything. Yeah. I mean, come on now.
Yeah.
The tone of his voice did sound a little harsh, but I'm not a mind reader. I mean,
you're not?
He sounded to me, no, I do my best. He sounded to me like it was a bit harsh. His tone of voice made it sound like he had some, you know, homophobic.
All right.
Fair enough. Or it could have been a joke. It's like, yeah, you know, that place, the F capital of the world. You know, ha ha.
I can't say that for certain.
We're living in a world where.
Okay, if he was announcing a drag contest, maybe he could have gotten away with it, but not a fucking
basic. Do you know the fucking things that Al Sharpton has said, and he has a show on MSNBC? Jesse Jackson called Manhattan Hymie Town.
Yeah.
I mean, come on now. And I don't care that they said those things. Sharpton talking about the diamond merchants. You know what it is? Because
I got it. No, black guys get all the breaks, don't they?
I'm sorry,
black people have just gotten away with murder.
Well, Alan, that's not the point, is it? That's really not the point.
That's my point. We understand where the anger comes from Hymie Town. I'm not saying we should cancel Jesse Jackson, but you're right. People have said things that are pretty bad, black and white, and they haven't been canceled.
Yeah, that's true. I agree.
I'm saying that. I hate that that black examples come to my mind, and maybe that says something about society, not me. Like Joy Reid. I mean, Joy Reid tweeted these horrible things, not like the most horrible things about homosexuals. Then she claimed she was hacked. Then she asked the FBI to investigate. I mean, you're like just piling on the ridiculousness.
But her kid is LGBT.
Right. And
so she, you know,
and nothing happened to her. So I don't know anything about this sportscaster. Maybe it was beyond the ugly thing. I just every time one of these things happen, I stop and ask myself, well, okay, is this a consistent principle that I'm backing up.
I see your point.
Quick, I say to myself, no, it's not. I'll forget this. Like blackface. Well, Megyn Kelly was terrible, but of course Justin Trudeau can do it, and Jimmy Kimmel did it, and Joni Mitchell did it. But if this Republican did it, it's not okay. And the governor of Virginia,
Ted Danson did it.
Ted Danson, the governor of Virginia, does it literally like minstrel blackface with a KKK guy next to him. So like. Now if this sports cat, but some woman at a Washington Post reporter's party did it to make fun of Megyn Kelly recently, and she got fired. I'm like, well, no, she shouldn't get fired
that's a dumb thing to do, though. She should get fired.
Yes, it was a dumb thing to do. Yeah, and
we don't want people working here that are that stupid and insane.
No, I don't agree with that. Well, you know what? We've all done dumb things. We've all done things, Alan. God forbid I had ever your whole career on video somewhere. I could find
something. You know why? I'm a live performer, so you don't.
Well, so, I mean, and nobody should take that as me defending somebody calling somebody a slur, ethnic slur, racial slur. I'm just saying, come on now.
Right.
I mean, you know, take care of the people at your fucking Thanksgiving dinner who do the same thing before you start lashing out at strangers, all right? We all have people we know. We don't throw them out of our lives. We say, no, dude, I wish you wouldn't talk that way, you know? But come on now, who are we kidding? Who are we kidding? But we want this guy fired. I know nobody in my life who would ever say anything like that. And if I did, I would never talk to them again.
Right.
Bullshit. Come on now. That's my point.
This has been an hour and a half with Noam Dorman.
Am I wrong?
Wait, is this going to be my meditation tape for tomorrow morning?
Just tell me I'm wrong.
No, I don't. I agree with you.
Okay. You're wrong.
Yeah, I'm not wrong.
I'm just kidding.
It's true. Yeah. It is true. There's so many fucking double standards here.
I was just reading about or saw a documentary on Roy Cohn, who used to have a house.
Oh, I'm watching that. I fell asleep and I have to watch the end of it.
Oh,
yeah.
My God. It's fantastic.
So good, right?
Character, right? Can we get Mary Trump on the show?
I doubt it, but you can ask.
Well, she's promoting a book.
We can certainly try.
Well, listen, the people who write books are so whores. They're whores for attention. Anybody who has a book out is such a whore for an attention.
What? What are you telling me?
Oh, wait, I'm getting dizzy. I have to go.
Okay,
I gotta hang up.
Let's wrap it up.
Okay.
Okay.
I love you, Judy.
Is pretty brilliant. I love you, Alan Havey.
I love you, Judy Gold.
Where can we find you? Where can everybody find you?
Me?
Yeah.
AlanHavey.com.
Okay. Judy?
I'm at JEWDYGOLD, Judy Gold, on Twitter and Instagram. And then my website is just regular Judy Gold.
And if you see Judy eating at the Olive Tree, feel free. Just sit down next to her and talk to her.
Yeah, sit next to her. I love talking to people. I love it.
Buy her book on wherever books are sold.
Wherever books are sold. But if you go to my website and you're really like very politically correct, there's all links to like indie book places and Amazon or whatever, you know.
Will you sign a book for someone if they request it?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. That's a great way to sell books.
In the old days, people,
my penis, I will sign a book.
I'm offended. I'm offended. I got to go.
I'm sorry.
Got to go. I'm offended.
Pandemic, okay. You could go to Barnes & Noble and do readings, I guess, which is a good place, which is like people do to sell books, but that's can't happen.
Well, I just dip my penis in the ink and then I can,
Okay, good night, everybody.
Good night. Thank you, Noam.
Thank you, Al.
Thank you.
Be safe.
Bye-bye, everybody.
You can email us at podcast@comedyseller.com and follow us on Instagram at live from the table. Good night.